So many people walk into my office for help with portfolios they've been managing themselves, and most of the time, I see a disorganized mess of too many securities, lots of trading, and no measurement of how they're doing. It's what my wife used to call the cat's breakfast. When I look at their portfolios, it's just all over the place. You know, they just know that what they thought was going to be an easy process of managing money themselves turns out not to be. And of course, it turns out not to be, because if it was easy, everybody would be successful at it and be easy to be rich. And of course, it's not. Michael Batnick, Director of Research at Ritholtz Wealth Management, has written about this, so I asked him to join me today. Hey, Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Steve.
You call the people that trade a lot and kind of time the market, you call them the 2% investors. Why is that?
Yeah, and that sounds pretty condescending, but it's not meant to be. But I speak to a lot of prospects and a lot of clients, and the more I do, the more I'm convinced that the majority of investors are what I call 2% investors, meaning that over the course of their lifetime, they'll have some good investments, they'll have some bad investments, and they're going to come away with a 2% return compounded.
Yeah.
And of course, the main culprit, the reason why they only earn 2% is because they buy at the wrong time, they sell at the wrong time, and they do it consistently over and over and over throughout their investing career.
Yeah. We say buy high, sell low, repeat until broke.
Yep.
That's how we characterize it. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And these people tend to check their account balances way more frequently than they should.
Right.
They read the newspaper. They think that they know something, and they drape themselves with the illusion of control where if I could only just do this and that. And we fail to see just how vast the financial markets are. So one of the great things about recognizing that you're a 2% investor and just taking your finger off the trigger is that the market always provides a lesson, always. Every year, every month, you look at the market and you say, hey, wow, if I was trading or being more active, I would be getting demolished. And you think about how 2016 got off to the worst start of any year that we've ever seen. And some of the fears at the time, to be honest, it was so long ago, I don't even remember what it was. But I think what was driving the sell-off was really the quote-unquote earnings recession coming up.
Yeah.
So in particular, small cap stocks, and the reason why they were getting hammered so much harder than large cap stocks, I'm not exactly quite sure, but it doesn't really matter because 10, 11 months later, small cap stocks are up 43%.
Yeah.
Energy stocks are up 46%. Financials up 40%. And why are they up 40%? Well, again, I don't know. And the thing is, if you didn't sell, you don't have to worry about why they're up 40%. You could just say, huh, man, there's a lot going on, a lot of variables. I can't put it all together, and I don't have to.
Yeah, but wait. The psychology that someone experiences when the market is down is, okay, the market's down 10%. If the market goes down by 30%, I am going to be so happy that I got out at 10%. I'm going to feel smart, like I made the right thing. And since the future cannot be foretold, there have been periods of time when getting out when the market was just 10% down would have been seemed like a brilliant move. Just pick 2008 as an example.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the problem is, how many false positives would you have reacted to? Because every 10% correction does not lead to a 20, 30, 40% bear market. I've actually written about that before. What would happen if you got out? Or matter of fact, what happens if you knew for sure, if God tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, I'm letting you in on a little secret. We're about to experience a bear market. And you got out and then you waited back to even until you got in. You still came out behind because what nobody thinks about and factors into the equation is dividends.
Yeah.
Dividends being reinvested at lower prices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That makes a humongous difference.
All right. So the bottom line is nobody really knows what the market's going to do. Back in February, March, too, there was the Brexit worry. I actually thought, you know, of all the worries that we've been through, you know, the fiscal cliff and, you know, the government not paying its bills and so on and so forth. I thought, well, you know, Brexit seems really, really important because you got a country actually breaking out of an economic union. Of course, you know, being a veteran in investing, I didn't do anything. I waited through to see what happened. And the market basically rallied after Brexit. And then with the Trump election, same thing. I mean, everybody thought the market was going to tank and the market has gone straight up. So timing is impossible. So we understand this idea of not timing the market, but now every day in the news, we hear that the U.S. stock market is hitting new highs. And the biggest reaction I hear from the people that I work with, clients and the like, is, you know, is the market too high? I don't want to buy here. I'm afraid to buy here. And my answer is, well, you know, it may be high, but that's really a good thing. I mean, when I was entered into the investment business, it was 1981, the Dow Jones was at 1,000, and then it was at 2,000, and then it was at 5,000. Those were highs. And now it's at 19,000. It's never going back to 1,000 or 5,000. So those highs are basically bolstered by the fact that corporations making up these markets are actually worth more today than they were 20 years ago. But, Michael, let me put the point on you. So we are at a high. We are at a high in the marketplace. What do you say about investing now?
A few things. So the natural inclination at all-time highs is either to take some chips off the table, or if, unfortunately, you're holding too much cash, well, I can't put it to work now because, you know, it's just my luck that I'm going to invest in the market. It's going to turn as if it were that easy.
Right.
So all-time highs, I mean, stating the obvious, are not a bearish characteristic. They're the exact opposite. And what you would expect to see in a bull market is new all-time highs, one after the other after the other. Now, you have to caveat this and say, well, obviously, it's true that the worst bear markets ever, the Great Depression, the 70s, 2000, 2008, of course they happen after all-time highs. However, I don't remember what the number is, but there's over 1,000 all-time highs. They are a constant. And then the idea, putting it to this current market environment, that you're not going to buy stocks because they're at all-time highs and we've got it out over our skis and we're pulling forward future returns. Well, I will remind you that stocks are up. The S&P 500 is up like 4% over the last year and a half. So, yes, it's up a lot since November 8th, but we're nowhere. And taking even a further step back, since over the last 16 years, stocks are up like 3.5% a year. So this could just be starting. And people might measure, oh, we're in a seven-year bull market, as if March 6, 2009 was the day the bull market started. That's absurd. If anything, I would argue that the bull market started in 2013 when we peaked out over 2000 and 2008. But then also, and maybe I'm getting away from the point, but also we did have a 21% quote-unquote bear market to reset the clock in 2011. So I don't know what chart or what number people are looking at when they talk about the length of this current bear market.
Yeah, well, I think you make a really good point. For the last 2 years or so, the U.S. stock market has been basically flat with a lot of volatility. So it's been kind of the worst of kind of both worlds. You've experienced a lot of volatility, which you accept in the hope that you'll earn a good, solid rate of return, and yet your rate of return was basically flat. A lot of frustration.
Right. So I joked the other day that this is the worst bubble I've ever seen.
This bubble should be ashamed of itself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So now that the market is starting to increase, and it looks like on the surface, for valid reasons, you know, it looks like the economy is really picking up a little bit. Interest rates are rising to reflect that. There is the promise of Trump's tax cuts and so on, which is just promise at this point, and, you know, deregulation and things like that. So there just seems to be a sense maybe that the animal spirits are starting to be aroused once again. And it's very possible that 2017 could turn into a pretty good year. Final words?
Yeah, sure. So we're up around 8% this year, which is pretty funny considering that we're in a quote-unquote low-return environment.
Yeah.
And 2017 could be a great year. Maybe, maybe not. I have no idea. Don't care. But the final point that I'd like to make, and this is really, really important, is that when you're making these sort of decisions to get out on February 11th at the lows and get back in when the dust is settled and you get out and you get in and you get out, you get in, what happens is that you're building up all sort of mental scar tissue in your brain. And your future decisions are not going to be made in a vacuum. You're going to say, well, last time I sold and I was wrong, so maybe this time I won't sell and maybe I'll be right. And then rinse and repeat, and you do the same thing over and over, and you always anchor to your most recent mistake. And that is why it's so powerful to just say, you know what? I don't know where stocks are going to go.
Yeah.
I'm going to put together a proper asset allocation model that I can stick with through thick and thin. And guess what? If that asset allocation model includes 25-30% cash because you know you're a nervous Nelly, fine. There's no one way to do it, but just build something that you are comfortable with when markets are screaming to the upside and crapping to the downside.
Very good. My guest, Michael Batnick, Director of Research at Ritholds Wealth Management. And to hear this interview again, you can go to stevepomerantz.com. That's P-O-M-E-R-A-N-Z, stevepomerantz.com. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.